Good morning. Thank you, Samir, and all the organizers for this interesting and eclectic meeting, combining many different kinds of points of view. And so I'm going to give you a different one. So I'm going to talk about gravitational condensate stars, and otherwise known as gravistars, and talk about actually how I want to get through this much anyway in 15 minutes, 20 minutes, is how this is actually this idea is actually inherent in general relativity from the start, from Schwarzschild's second paper in 1916, and that's basically described in this paper a couple of years ago. The originals are over here, and there's a review article, an earlier review article, which probably now needs updating. So, and then I would like to talk about, if we have time, to the observational consequences. So let me start by reminding you something just from classical general relativity, is that we have No-Hare theorem that states that all black holes can be described by their mass, angular momentum, and electric charge. There is something called the irreducible mass, which is proportional, the square of it is proportional to the area, which was proven back in the 70s to always increase if you have a basically positivity conditions on the energy of infalling matter, then the area always increases. And this is, of course, the reason I'm repeating all of this is because this is totally classical. It has no H-bars in it, no Boltzmann's constant. There's no statistical mechanics or quantum mechanics in these formulas, nothing but Newton's constant and the speed of light. And if you write down the variation from one of these through this class of solutions of given M, J, and Q, then there's the SMAR formula, which tells you how the mass or the energy changes according to changing these parameters. And the interesting thing I want to draw your attention to is this change in the area produces a change in the energy. This is kappa is just the surface gravity of the black hole given by this formula for in general, but let's focus on the Schwarzschild case. It's just 1 over 4gm. Again, purely classical. And if I were to show you this to an undergraduate, we'd say, oh, the energy is proportional, the change in the energy is proportional to the area. Well, that is the definition, basically, of a surface tension in classical mechanics. If you ask about a bubble, how the energy changes as they change the area, it's in exactly this way, where this coefficient is the surface tension. Of course, in classical general relativity, we assume there's no surface there, and therefore, there's no way to assign that to a surface tension. But I'm going to show you that that can be changed. So why do we think there are black holes? Well, basically, because if you impose energy conditions, like the weak energy condition or the strong energy condition, there are various theorems which show that geodesics are focused, matter has to fall in, and there's no way to avoid the singularity. However, these classical conditions, which seem reasonable enough based on classical matter, are, of course, violated in quantum theory. So we know that quantum field theory, Casimir effect, for example, violates the weak energy condition. And we know by now that the strong energy condition is violated in various ways. It's violated by inflation. It's violated by the observations of dark energy, and it's even violated in hadronic physics. In the Bagg model, for example, the Bagg constant of a nucleon has p equals minus rho as well. So there's actually, as reasonable as these conditions seem classically, they're actually not expected to hold in quantum theory. So these are just general comments before I just show you a little bit of the calculation of the Schwarzschild solution. So why should there be something like a condensate? Well, basically, condensation happens in all branches of physics. When you compress quantum material hard enough, you eventually have a condensate forms. We know that in atomic physics. We know that in particle physics, I mean the Higgs field, or the chiral condensate of QCD are condensates. And you can ask yourself, why should that not happen in gravity, and what would it be if it did happen? So this is just very general considerations. If you think of the spin 2 bosons of gravity, the gravitons, their interactions are attractive, and as I'm going to argue, the interactions become strong near the Schwarzschild radius, then you should expect these attractive interactions to form some kind of condensation. And if it did form a condensate, what would it be? Well, it has to be generally covariant, so it has to be described by an order parameter. If it's a scalar, then basically the only thing you can have is p equals minus rho, and that's exactly what one does, for example, for the inflaton field in inflation. And just general thermodynamics tells you from the Gibbs relation that if you have p equals minus rho, that's a vacuum configuration. So if you have no chemical potential, that's equivalent to a zero entropy state. So very different than the discussions we've been hearing in the last couple of days. Instead of trying to find a very large, exponentially large number of states, a condensate of this kind corresponds to a single macroscopic state where the entropy is zero. It's a vacuum or a ground state. And this, of course, would violate the strong energy condition, and this dark energy could act as a repulsive core. So that was the basic idea we had back in 2001 and 2002. And in a kind of acausal talk, what I'm going to show you is that this was actually inherent in Schwarzschild's second paper in 1916. So let's go back to very simple considerations. Consider static spherical geometry. You all know the metric is described by two functions. I guess I didn't write the line element, but this is the TT component. This is the 1 over the RR component. And if I can write the RR component in terms of a mass function, the Misner-Sharp mass. So there are two metric functions. And in general, there are three functions of R: spherical symmetry, static. And those three functions are the energy density, the radial pressure, which has no index, and the transverse pressure. There are two Einstein equations I have to solve, one conservation equation. It's underdetermined, of course. There are three equations for five functions, so I need additional information. Of course, if you're building a star, the other information you usually put is the equation of state, and if it's a fluid, you assume that P perp is equal to P, so that's one condition. If you oppose equation of state, of a relation between P and R, then that gives you a second condition, and that closes the system. Okay, that's just repeating this. Now, this is the metric. Now, the important thing, I think it was mentioned already the other day, so I'm going to discuss the Schwarzschild second paper, the second solution, but why it's an important it has to be generic. If it were just one particular solution, it wouldn't be very interesting. The important, the thing that makes it generic is the Buchdahl bound, which basically is just taking the classical equations with static and spherical symmetry. Buchdahl showed in 1959 that if you have just these conditions and a monotonically decreasing density function, if rho is any function whatever, that is decreasing as a function of R, and you match the star's surface at capital R to the exterior Schwarzschild solution, we know by Birkhoff's theorem the exterior Schwarzschild, then you can prove a theorem that there is no non-singular solution if this radius is less than 9/8 the Schwarzschild radius. So this is this bound, this inequality comes from this inequality sign if you go through his proof. So this shows that the pressure must diverge somewhere in the interior if, for any equation of state whatsoever, for a static geometry with spherical symmetry under these conditions which are stated here. Okay. And the important thing, of course, is that 9/8 is greater than 1. So this happens before you reach a macroscopic distance, before you reach the horizon, the Schwarzschild radius. Okay, and that's stated here. So if I think of a sequence of configurations of different R adiabatically compressing, so I'm just looking at static geometry, so nothing is actually collapsing. This is just a sequence of static geometries, all matched to the exterior Schwarzschild. And for any isotropic equation of state, you have this theorem that Buchtel proved. So that's what makes the constant density solution interesting, because it's an extreme case. If I set this inequality equal to inequality, d rho dr is zero, then rho is a constant, and I'll just parameterize that constant by the total mass and the total size, r cubed. And so now I just go and solve the equations, and that's in textbooks. You can find it, for example, in Weinberg's book and Wall's book. And this is just standard, very standard solution of the equations. So the mass function looks like this. The total mass is m, so it just grows like r cubed as I integrate out. The interior metric function h of r looks like this, where this parameter, I've used a second notation, h squared, is just related to the total energy density. The pressure is given by this simple ratio of algebraic functions. And you immediately see how Buchtel's theorem works in this case. There's a denominator here, and this denominator can go to zero, and therefore the pressure will diverge if the radius is less than 9/8. So if you try to solve this equation, you find that there's no solution for real R if R, capital R, is greater than 9/8 the Schwarzschild. But as soon as it becomes less than 9/8 or equal to 9/8, then this denominator diverges. Okay, and that's usually the reason why people stop talking about it. They say, okay, the pressure diverged, and therefore I'm not interested. This is a singular solution. Of course, a black hole is a singular solution also, so we should look a little bit more carefully, and that's basically what Pavel Mazur and I did a few years ago. The interesting thing, you see, is that if you keep going, if R is less than 9/8, then the radius at which this divergence occurs moves out from the origin. It's at 9/8, it's exactly at the origin, but as I go less than 9/8, this radius where the divergence occurs moves out from the origin, becomes a spherical shell at R naught, and as R becomes equal to the Schwarzschild radius, and in fact, this divergence actually occurs at the Schwarzschild radius itself, at the horizon. So as I compress the thing in, the divergence moves out from the origin out to the Schwarzschild radius in just this way. And the other function, the metric function, is given by this. And notice it's a square, so it never vanishes. It vanishes at one point, but it never goes negative. So there's no horizon. And so you can just easily plot this. Here's for R greater than 9/8, the pressure is very mildly behaved, but as you start to approach 9/8, the central pressure starts growing. And apparently, I was a bit amazed, in 100 years, nobody actually looked at what happens after that, but as R goes less than 9/8, this pressure singularity occurs at this finite R naught, and as R goes to the Schwarzschild radius, this is the radius of the star, remember. This is the Schwarzschild radius given in terms of the mass. This is the radius at which the divergence occurs. It goes, as this goes to the Schwarzschild radius from above, this goes to the Schwarzschild radius from below. And you can easily see from these simple formulas, at that point, then P becomes equal to minus rho, because this denominator just simplifies. And so at that point, what you get is the pressure becomes P equals minus rho inside, with a little cusp here, which just, this just becomes a square, okay? And so it's a W equals minus one, P equals minus rho fluid inside. And because F is a square, the square root of F is an absolute value, so there's a cusp. At this singularity, the derivative changes discontinuously. And so this actually describes a gravistar.
Can I just go essentially you're describing the space of solutions, but are you also thinking of this as a dynamical process?
No, except in a very adiabatic sense. I mean, I'm looking at a sequence of static solutions, so I'm not really entitled to do dynamics, but I can still think of going through this sequence very slow. Right? So now the interesting thing about this singularity is it shouldn't stop you from looking at this, because the singularity is integrable. That's what we also found. So this, the place where this denominator, I call D, that's this denominator here. The place where this denominator goes to zero, where the pressure diverges, you see what happens. P just changes sign as I go through that zero. But F is the square of this, same denominator, the same quantity. So if you look at the appropriate integral, and the appropriate integral is the Komar mass energy flux. Komar showed back in these days that you could cast Einstein's equations basically in the form of Gauss's law, so that in terms of the surface gravity, this is basically the force. So this is like del dot E equals the charge density, and instead you have the surface gravity, and you have this combination of terms from the energy momentum tensor. And the point is square root of F multiplies P. So where P might go to zero, square root of F is also going to zero. So this becomes an integral. This becomes a cusp, but a regular function, no divergence. And the step function in the derivative just means you get a delta function in the surface gravity. So if you go through the analysis carefully, you can write the equations in this form, and you see that basically what's happening is that you're forced to have a non-zero P perp at this one point at the singular surface at R naught, and you could easily work it out by the discontinuity in the cusp. And what's going on then is that you have a volume energy, which is E volume, and a surface energy, which is the energy of this integral of this delta function, which is, of course, an integrable distribution. The discontinuity and the surface gravity, they're equal and opposite on each side. And you can do this for any value of capital R, but in the limit that capital R goes to the Schwarzschild radius, R naught, remember, also goes to the Schwarzschild radius. So this just becomes 1 over the Schwarzschild radius. And now you actually have a physical surface, because there's a physical transverse pressure. The transverse pressure means there's a surface energy associated with that and a surface tension. The surface tension is not the surface gravity itself, as in Smarr's formula, but the difference of surface gravities, the discontinuity from one side to the other. So it's a standard boundary layer problem, really. The same thing you teach undergraduates in electrodynamics. If you have a surface charge density, the electric field has a discontinuity from Gauss's law. And in this case, because there's a discontinuity in the pressure, that leads to a discontinuity in the surface gravity. Okay, so now you can reinterpret the first law, the conservation law, which is Smarr's formula, in terms of this sequence of solutions. And you see you just have the mass is equal to a volume term. So if you rework out sort of the Bardeen, Carter, Hawking formulas, but for this configuration, you have this surface gravity term. And there is, of course, no entropy at all in this configuration. There's no h-bar in this configuration. It's nothing else but classical geometry. And so this is a zero entropy, zero temperature condensate. And there's no trapped surface. So there's truly static. T is a global time everywhere. The discontinuity in kappa, of course, means that the interior is not the analytic continuation of the exterior, as you assume in the usual case, where you extend the coordinates inward. F never changes sign. There's no true horizon, no true trapped surface. And these are purely classical formulas. So surface area is area, not entropy. Surface gravity is surface tension, not temperature.
Can you say where the surface is?
Yeah, in this limit, it's at the horizon.
At the horizon.
Yeah, at the would-be horizon.
So the picture is that you have a surface,
right,
a hard surface.
Right. So in this, I got here by a set of a sequence, but forget now the sequence and just look at this limit. Then this is the Schwarzschild radius, p equals minus rho interior, and here is a p perp, which leads to this surface tension, which is the discontinuity in the surface gravities.
The amount of the strength of the surface tension is?
Yeah, is just, this is just 1 over r. Okay, so it's pretty small actually for a big object.
Emil, are these things mechanically stable?
Yes. But let's, I mean, that takes some work. I can't.
No, I understand that.
So, yeah, but that's why I answered that way. But I mean, we'll see how far we can get. Okay, so I wanted to, I just wanted to say this much. Let's stop at this point because it's, I think, very interesting, both historically and for physics that we're trying to discuss, that this possibility was always there. It was always there. If Schwarzschild had gone a little farther, of course he didn't, but if he had, and he had a little bit more modern techniques and understanding discontinuities and junction conditions, you would have seen the gravistar before you saw a black hole coming out of Einstein's GR. So you're not violating general relativity, right? This is just a statement about coordinates. You can go to Rindler-like coordinates, which look like this. The difference from the usual case is that this radial variable c is a real variable. The surface is at c equals 0. So c remains real. And of course, that means, again, there's no horizon and there's no analytic continuation. There is simply a matching at this discontinuous surface. And for the real aficionados and GR, this is actually a nice example of generalizing the Israel junction conditions to a null boundary. I mean, Israel worked it out for time-like tubes, but for null boundaries, it gets a bit more tricky. So here you have a construction which explicitly gives you a junction across the null boundary in which you can compute everything. And there are, of course, it's real coordinates, real coordinate transformation, which I think is what Einstein had in mind, not complex continuation. All right, so now I want to, there are many questions I'm sure you're going to have, but let me make a few observations also. So in terms of stability, of course, this is just a static object. In order to study stability, you have to look at perturbations. But it certainly has the right sign here. If this sign had come off the opposite way, then you'd throw it out immediately. Because what the sign tells you that this is positive, it tells you that if I increase the area a little bit by wiggling the surface, that's going to cost me energy rather than reduce the energy. So it's just, in that sense, like a soap bubble. A soap bubble is stable because I can wiggle it a little bit, and that costs me energy rather than reducing the energy. So the surface tension acts as a restoring force rather than an unstable force. In order to do proper stability analysis, of course, is beyond what I can tell you in this talk. It still has to be done, actually, but that requires a more dynamical theory. This is just a construction from Schwarzschild's, basically Schwarzschild's solution. But again, but now you can say something very qualitative quickly, which is that you have normal modes of this surface, just like a hydrodynamic bubble in a fluid. The surface vibrations are, of course, going to be quantized in terms of the modes on this closed surface. So you expect discrete normal modes with a frequency of order of the 1 over the light travel time. So this tells you, in addition to the echoes that we were talking about a few days ago, and I'll try to get to that, this tells you that you also expect some sort of discrete fluctuations of the surface to produce a discrete spectrum of gravitational waves, which would be a fairly dramatic, spectacular signature. And it's in a reasonable range, perhaps, for LIGO. So now You can also ask about what happens to light rays going through this surface. So in the geometric optics approximation, you can just look at the null geodesics. And this is very amusing. It turns out because of the defocusing of the sitter-like interior, it actually has a negative index of refraction. And so, light rays are bent outwards from the normal. And so you get a picture like this. If you have an object, a light source behind this object, you, to the extent that the light actually penetrates, of course, you have to look at the interactions, and the geometric optics approximation might not be valid for all wavelengths, but for short enough wavelengths, it should pass through and actually have a defocusing, act as a defocusing lens. So the outside, of course, would be bending the light rays just like the Schwarzschild solution. So you'll have the light rings that are expected for an ordinary black hole. But if there's a light source behind it, then you actually should see something coming through and this defocusing signal. Now, that has to be worked out to see exactly what that would produce for example, the Event Horizon Telescope.
What is the surface made of?
OK, I haven't told you, but it's basically going to come from the fluctuations of quantum fields. And that's, you're asking for more microscopic description. For the moment, this was just a construction, and it just says that the possibility is there. If you can have this transverse pressure, you have this matching. I haven't told you what it's made of.
Yes, but now you're describing light rays passing through.
Right. So then you have to look at the interaction of light and other matter with the surface, which requires a more detailed model. So I guess I'm out of time.
Yeah, minus 5.
I'm minus 5. Okay. So I should stop. I'm sure you have a million questions, but I also have some questions. But I wanted to show you a little bit about what the dynamics could be that could produce this, but that we can leave for the discussion. I'll just end with a bunch of remarks. Of course, this configuration is non-singular, and so since the K is a time-like vector everywhere, a killing vector, it means a Hamiltonian exists, it's Hermitian with normal boundary conditions, and so you have no problem with unitarity, there's no information loss. It means that in order to have something like this form, you're going to need large vacuum polarization effects near the horizon, and that's another talk. But you could, just from semi-classical estimates, these terms, for example, in the Bulwer-like state, become important when the function f of r becomes of order L Planck over the Schwarzschild radius. But if you work that out in terms of proper lengths, because of the square root of h factor near the horizon, would be horizon. The proper length is actually the geometric mean of the Planck length and the Schwarzschild radius. So it's not like what people were discussing the other day with the firewall picture. And of course, this is not a firewall because the system is cold. There's no thermal radiation. It's not a hot body at all. But the logarithmic time delay that, for example, Paolo was talking about should be there for light rays passing through. So in other words, you need to now put back quantum mechanics in order to understand what the surface is doing. So I think this was about echoes. And I mean, now you know the potential inside. By the way, there's an interesting one quarter in the de Sitter that just comes out from this Schwarzschild solution. So that's interesting because that is what makes the matching possible. And at least for the spherical symmetric case, we now have exactly what these potentials are. And so the picture that has been described really does apply here. And you have a centrifugal barrier inside, and you have this trapped waves and echoes, but now I also have a surface which can have discrete modes. So that's on top of the echoes. All right, this is the summary. I don't know if I have to say it. I think I've said everything. It's interesting that this is present already in classical relativity. And the importance of the Buchtel bound is that this should happen for any equation of state. I mean, the constant density solution is the extreme case where you can push this as close as possible to the 9/8 bound. But if you have quark matter or ordinary matter, then this is going to happen at a higher radius before you even reach the Buchdahl bound. So it should be generic. It should be from the inside out, right? That gives you a picture that something is happening inside at the center first, to the extent you can think of this as an adiabatic process. The boundary layer is integrable. It's cold, not a firewall. And I've already said that there's no information paradox. The imaging is different for rays going through. And recently, a student of Pavel Mazur's, has shown that this configuration also exists for slow rotation. So if you slowly rotate it up using methods and equations that Jim Harrell developed years ago, then you can actually write a slowly rotating solution. The general high rotation one has not been found. This is what I would have to talk about next in terms of the questions of how to make this thing. But I'm going to stop here.
Maybe just one quick question. So,
yes, yeah. Abel, do you have some kind of formation scenario where we start with ordinary matter and wind up with this?
Yeah, I can. I mean, speculation. I don't have a complete calculation.
Speculation somehow, vacuum fluctuations? Or
vacuum polarization effects.
Get big,
and get Bulwer like terms near the horizon, near the forming horizon.
Does that require a special state or something?
No. In fact, that's what the last half of the talk is.
It's generic.
Yeah, I claim it's generic. I claim that the unruh state, you know, which Don was referring to earlier, in which the effects are small, that's a special state.
How come it doesn't show up in the simulations?
Which simulations? You have to do something.
For example, the LIGO simulations.
They're not putting those vacuum polarization terms in at all.
That's right.
So you put H bar to zero, you won't see it.
Oh, I see.
You assume classical matter, you're going to have a quantum effect to produce large vacuum polarization. Okay. I'm over time, so it's up to the chairman.
We can have more discussions after.
This is a more discussion session.
Yeah.
I'm saying that not everybody.